We continue our study and look at the life of this man, Joseph, from the Old Testament and the book of Genesis, and particularly tonight, perhaps going to chapter 40 and verse 3, the text for tonight, but we will range around on both sides of that text. Chapter 40 and verse 3, "And he put him, and he put them in ward or in guard in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound." We will leave the dreams and the experience of the dreams for another occasion. I want simply tonight to look at one thing in the experience of this man, the fact that he was in prison. When you go through the scriptures and the Bibles, the Bible, you find that some of the greatest saints that are given to us there struggled to understand what God was doing in their lives and in the world. Job was struck and afflicted, and so much was taken from him. And we can understand easily the bewilderment he must have felt when wave after wave fell upon him. Jeremiah, he was called to be the messenger and the servant of the Lord, and in chapter 20 and verse 7, and he takes the Lord to task in the most astonishing and breathtaking of language. He says, "Lord, you deceived me. You deceived me in what you said I was going to do." He couldn't understand why things had happened or didn't happen the way he expected them to. The book of Habakkuk. Now there's one that deals consistently and all the way through it with providence and understanding what God is doing. There was, we said it this morning, we repeat it tonight, there was great sin and immorality in the God's people in the Old Testament, and that immorality brought God's judgment upon them in a way that they could never have expected. God was going to raise up the Babylonian nation against God's people, and to the prophet Habakkuk, it was just beyond understanding. God using a people like that against his own people? Lord, how can you do it? He couldn't understand it. He had to grapple with the problem. And he went to his watchtower, he tells us. He went to his watchtower to find out the slightest indication to give him understanding and to help him. Chapter 3 tells us the way in which he responded. Well, he didn't have a full understanding of what the Lord was doing, but there in chapter 3 we're told of his response and his reaction. "I'm going to trust in the Lord." This is empty, and there's no cattle sound from the byre or from the stalls, and there's no food in the larder, and everything is empty, but "I'm going to trust in the Lord." He can't explain it, but he's trusting. Another example of someone perhaps trying to understand God's dealings with him is the man before us tonight, Joseph. A flesh and blood example. You can almost hear Joseph speaking it. You can almost hear the words upon his lips as they slam that prison door behind him. You can almost hear Joseph say, "Yes, but what about my dreams? What about my dreams?" Here he is in prison. What of them now? When we are battered, when we're beaten by the storms of life that we cannot understand, it is good counsel for us also to go to the saints, to find a kinship with them. They're going through the same as we're going through. And we can be strengthened by that oneness and solidarity with them. But more so, perhaps we will find an answer or part of a solution that will help us to cope and to go forward. So we find Joseph tonight. We saw him last week, the victim of a false accusation by Potiphar's wife. Potiphar comes home and the story is repeated to him, no doubt with a little bit of exaggeration to make the point very clear and plain from the point of view of the wife. And there she has the evidence, a rag or cloth or something that belonged to Joseph. There was no doubt about it. He's guilty as charged. But yet, Joseph is not put to death. Perhaps, as we suggested, because Potiphar had two reputations that he held in his own mind. He knew the past record and behavior of Joseph. He knew the integrity of this man as he was in charge of everything that he was given in his own house. There wasn't a single penny missing. There wasn't a single thing done out of turn. He was as clean as that. And he held that in his mind. And then, of course, he would have held in his mind something, perhaps, of the reputation of his own wife. Maybe it was something that she was always at. Maybe this is the way she always behaved. But anyway, he didn't put Joseph to death. Because the time was not yet ended. His work had not yet been finished. There was a constraint upon Potiphar's work of mind and decision. Joseph had a huge responsibility over the nation in the direst of times. He wasn't put to the sword. He was put in prison. And maybe, as we said there, the door swung behind him and he would have asked the question, "What about my dreams?" But we might well benefit by looking at this episode of Joseph in prison as but another classroom where the Lord had vital lessons to teach him. Joseph needed a firm hand of steel. When you think of the responsibility that was going to be his for 7 years of famine, he needed to have that nerve and that metal in his soul, but still retain a balanced and a sensitive heart. He needed a strong character. He had a wise head, and he needed a gracious life. There was yet much for Joseph to learn. And so the next classroom, which the Lord took him into, was totally surprising, very unexpected, and maybe perhaps a little bit frightening for him. What could he possibly learn in the deep, dark, fetid atmosphere of a prison? But the Lord had vital lessons for him and perhaps for ourselves. So the first thing I want us to think of tonight is Joseph in prison. And then secondly, I want us to think of Joseph had benefits in prison. And thirdly, Joseph had company in prison. In prison, had benefits with company. So therefore, he was in prison. What can we say about his experience of being in prison? Well, four simple thoughts I want to suggest to you. First of all, he was confined. Now that would have intensified the suffering to this man because Joseph was a free spirit. He was used to being on the move. His father sent him to Shechem and then he moved on himself to Dothan. He was a wandering man, used to the outdoor life. Sometimes in these travels, there was nothing more than the stars or the heavens covering himself at night as he slept on his journeys. But now he was shut in. There are different words given at chapter 40 and verse 15. He says there, "I'm put into this dungeon." It's really a hellhole. That's what the word means. It's a hole. And there's nothing attractive about it at all. He's confined, boxed in, with no privileges. We have the talk today about prisoners taking the government to task for human rights just because they've got a slop out. There was nothing like that in the days of Joseph being in prison. It was stifling. It was oppressive. There were no windows. There was a little ventilation. And there was little movement. And it was oppressive all the more so because he was a youth used to the roaming open spaces. The danger, and the real danger to him, we can put it like this, was of him losing his mind just because he was confined. But the second thing we can say, not only was he confined, but he was also in chains. The rattle and the noise of the chains were a constant reminder of him. He was always reminded, there's no way out of here. There's no escape for you this time, Joseph. You're really tied down and shackled. Yes, he had responsibilities. He was given some privileged responsibilities from the governor of the prison to look after the infrastructure of the prison just the same way as he looked after the house of Potiphar. Yes, he had responsibilities, and maybe these responsibilities bought him and brought him a degree of privilege. Maybe he had certain little special things because of what he was and what he did. But no matter, no matter what favors he enjoyed, he was still in prison. He was not free. And every time he moved his ankles, Psalm 105 gives us the summary of the life of Joseph, and it tells us that he was sore with the shackles around his feet. Every time he took a step, he would hear the clatter and the rattle. And he knew he was in chains. There was no delusion. It was reality that was hitting him in the face. He was a prisoner with no obvious way of escape. And the dreams that he had, you might as well throw them out the window, Joseph. Now, you're no way you're going to have them fulfilled. That's the voice of the cynic speaking to him. Nobody knew where he was. Nobody knew what he was going through. Nobody cared for him. As far as his family was concerned, he's dead. He's gone. But God cared for him. God cared for him. He was confined. He was in chains. He was also falsely condemned. What had he gained by sticking to his integrity? What did he gain by the stance that he took? He had resisted the immoral approaches of Potiphar's wife. He had resisted these things, but the very stain that he ran from is the very stain that now stuck to him because of her false words speaking to her husband. He was falsely condemned. And the big question to him was always this. Does God see? Does God take note? And will God act on what's happening to his children? We're told that God is interested in, God's concern for the good, the well-being of his children. Why then? Why then is Joseph in prison? No freedom, no family, no friends, and no character. Falsely condemned. And this isn't the first time. This is history repeating it in his life and experience. Two times he did what he thought was right. And two times his clothes were used against him. He went to Shechem and he moved on to Dothan. He did what was right. And they took his coat and they threw that at his father, saying his son is dead. He stood out against the advances of Potiphar's wife, and she grabbed the cloth that he was wearing, and she used that again to accuse him. Falsely condemned. How would we have felt in that kind of circumstance and situation? Remember what he tells us when he's resisted day after day the advances of Potiphar's wife. How can I do this and sin against God? And surely we are reminded there that the Christian, Old or New Testament, we've always got to live out our days under the shadow of God's judgment and God's knowledge of us. Rather than changing the circumstances, and letting Joseph out, Joseph was instead, he was made to be a light for honesty and a light for integrity in the midst of these awful circumstances in which he was living. Darkness was round about him on every side, but here is somebody who did what was right, come what may. He knew what he had to do and consequences he left to God. And if he was falsely condemned, so let it be. At least his conscience was at rest. Condemned in prison. Confused in chains, condemned. One last thought before we move on. He was confused. He had dreams. Dreams that he had shared with his family, with his brothers, with his father, with his mother. But where are these dreams now? Were they from the Lord? Setback after setback had come. He had been sold to the Midianites, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt, and there he was in the house of Potiphar, and now he was delivered from Potiphar's house into prison, and all the steps seemed to be going further and further and further down setback after setback. Was it mere delusion on my part? Was it a false notion that I had? Was there a degree of pride and vanity wanting to boast over my family? Confused. Nobody cared, and nothing was happening. And there he was, lonely and isolated. Was this then to be his lot? Was this then to be his future, just because he took a stand for what he knew to be right? It doesn't make sense to me. But he was not forgotten. The greatest compensation that he had is highlighted for us here. The Lord was with Joseph. All of us can set out from time to time on many different ventures, and we're filled with enthusiasm and excitement. We're going into it, applying ourselves, and then suddenly our idealism hits reality. And which one's going to win? We take our spirituality with us out into the world of what the Lord is going to do, what his promises mean. We take the words that God has given us, and we're hoping in and trusting in that he is going to do this and he's going to do that in our community, in our nation, and amongst our people. We've got these tremendous spiritual principles and promises. That's the enthusiasm we go out with. And suddenly we've got to meet with the reality of life in the streets and the hearts and the homes of people. Which one wins? A cloud begins to come over our horizon. Life begins to be dull. Path begins to get steeper and the weight begins to get heavier. We feel that our resources are ebbing away. We try to apply ourselves harder to the work that is given us, only to find that that enthusiasm and that energy begins to drop off quicker. And we're still in the same place. We haven't made progress. We haven't got anywhere. We're confused. What does the promise of the Lord mean? We thought we reached the bottom when we reached Potiphar's house. We thought that that was the bottom and there was only one way but up. But now he's told and he discovers that he's got to go deeper. And he cannot see a way out. Joseph is in prison. But the second thing I suggested to you that we could see here is not only was Joseph in prison, but Joseph had benefits. It's all too easy for us to see everything in a bad light. Everything is a dark cloud over life, ourselves, or over Joseph's. But that very dark cloud often has silver edges, and equally it bursts sometimes with blessings on our head. What were the benefits here? Well, let me go back with you, please, to chapter 39 and verse 20. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. It's no ordinary prisoner, and it's no ordinary prison. We are told here it is where the king's prisoners were bound. What were the benefits that Joseph had in that place? Three of them. Let me just mention them briefly. First of all, he mixed and he met with a special kind of person. He mixed and he met with a special kind of person. Remember we said that this was a classroom. It was dark, it was smelly, it was damp. It was a fetid place. But it was a classroom, and here he's now learning lessons. Mixing and meeting special kind of person. It was the elite. It was people with rank and people with influence that were in this prison. We go on to read about it in chapter 40. It wasn't just the ordinary servants. It wasn't those that were underneath the stairs that were here. It was the chief butler. It was the chief baker. It was those that were at the top of the house and the running of the palace. It was the elite of Pharaoh's house who had fallen out with the king that were put into this prison. And these were people who now were mixing with Joseph. And in the conversation, no doubt they would tell of how the palace system worked. No doubt they would share something of the politics of how things ran in Pharaoh's establishment. The people who were in the inn and the people to avoid. He would be told and he would be familiar with the running of the house and the running of the kingdom, the positions that were vital and the positions that he could pass by. All of these things were coming to him now because of the place where he was, mixing with this company, fitting him out for later on. So whenever he was thrown into the government, whenever suddenly the chains were taken off him and suddenly Pharaoh promoted him, "You're second in command, Joseph, get on with the job." Whenever that happened, then Joseph hit the ground and he was running because of the insights that he got and the information he gleaned from those he mixed with and met in this elite prison. Those that would give him an understanding of what was going on around about him. He was ready only because he had been in this prison. Verse 3 of 40 brings it out. He put them in the ward in the house of the captain into the prison in the place where Joseph was bound. The providence of the Lord bringing all of these people into the life of Joseph that he might learn from them. We can be quick, and it can be all too easy for us simply to draw the conclusion, just as if we were in similar circumstances, a black cloud over our head and everything going against us, and in the prison or something similar, it would be very easy for us to come to the same conclusion, everything's against me. But perhaps there are lessons, and perhaps there are preparations that only can be had when we go through these experiences. And these preparations are vital for future Christian service and work. The first benefit he had, he mixed and he met with an elite kind of prisoner. The second thing of the benefit there was, not only he met and mixed, but he was molded. His character needed to be shaped, and his character needed to be strengthened. Remember what we said, that Joseph had the blessings of a wise head. Yes, he had the wise head, but he needed to translate all that wisdom into practical things in his life. There were other aspects of his character that needed attention. Joseph, he certainly wasn't used to hard work. He was a little bit spoiled by his father, maybe more than a little bit. But certainly there was a little bit of pride in the coat that he had. He had lived a very protected existence. Remember, he was the only two. There were two sons that were kept back when all the others were sent to Shechem to look after the sheep. There was only him and Benjamin left. He was wrapped up in cotton wool as far as his father could get away with it. And so, Joseph needed to see life on the outside. Joseph needed to be able to read people. And the best place for that to happen, the school of hard knocks, in prison. When he is the ruler in Egypt, he's going to have a string of people knocking at his door, and they're going to come away with hard luck stories, trying to get a little bit more food. They're going to try every kind of device to delude Joseph. They're going to spin a yarn that would be acceptable to anyone else. But Joseph had to be molded to see past it and to see through it. The hard luck stories that were going to come his way, he had to get inside the skin. And it started in prison. Still coming into his character, but still sensitive in his spirit. Might not have been pleasant for us. Hebrews 12 and 11 tells us that this kind of experience is not pleasant, but it has its reward at the end. Look at life where we are. Look at life, what we're going through. We may conclude, well, what I'm going through and where I am, my life is a waste. But not so. Maybe it's a classroom that we don't recognize. And God is teaching us something for later on that'll stand us in good stead. In prison, it's amazing to say it, but in prison, Joseph was being fitted out for the palace. Character molded. He met and he mixed with an elite crowd. And then thirdly, the third benefit was, he had the mercies of God. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. When God deals with us, there is always a balancing of circumstances and character with the situation we're in. God never pushes us or tests us beyond our ability. We might look at Joseph and say things were extreme for Joseph just now. Things were extreme. He was a sensitive person. He was on the edge of cracking. But notice the way the tender sensitivity of touch by the Lord. The Lord showed him mercy. Just that little counterbalancing to pull him back into the middle and not to lose his mind. We will look at the substance of it later on in a minute, but let's just think of the fact of that experience first of all. The word that is used here is the loving kindness of God. God was showing and showing to Joseph God's faithfulness. That's what the word means. It's faithfulness that what he has said, what he has promised, what he will do through these promises and in these dreams, that's what God is going to fulfill. And that's what Joseph was assured of, even although he was in prison. The loving kindness, the faithfulness of God to what he had said. The evidence was there then for Joseph that he was still at the center of God's plan and purposes for him. There was the evidence that things were not out of control. That God was still at work, and in a most remarkable way. God draws back the veil and gives a little encouragement to Joseph and to ourselves along the way. William Cooper writes about God's providence, and he says the second verse of the hymn that he wrote runs like this, and it's so appropriate for Joseph and can be for ourselves. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. The mercies of the Lord, the benefits that Joseph had in prison. But then the last thing I want us to think about is the company he had. Who was with him there? Who was with him there? Joseph took a severe path downwards. We could have easily drawn the line and says, right at Potiphar's house, that's it, enough's enough. But the Lord pushed that line, and it went lower. And as it went lower, Joseph had to go down these steps that were open for him, but he didn't go alone. As Joseph went from the house to the prison, we are told here the Lord was with Joseph. The presence of the Lord, put it that way, to pin it in our minds, the presence of the Lord with him. He was assured of the favor of God. He wasn't delivered. He wasn't given a green channel to suddenly take him out of that experience of the prison, but he was put into it, and he was enabled to triumph and to come through it. And coming through it, come out of it closer to the Lord, as we were saying, with a character molded and better equipped for service. That's what makes all the difference, the presence of the Lord in what we're experiencing in life. Today, and especially in these next 8 days, today, people are so dependent on what's going on round about them. The enjoyment, the peace, the thrill that they're looking for is so often drawn from what's around them and about them. But not so for the Christian. Be it a palace or a prison, what's important is the presence of the Lord with us. If you go to the New Testament and to Acts chapter 26, there Paul, chapter 24 tells us that the end of the chapter, I think it is, that Paul was 2 years Festus had left to Paul to fester in prison. 2 years he was in prison until Agrippa came. And in chapter 26, Agrippa takes Paul before him. And you can almost hear the chains again as Paul is dragged up the stairs out of the dungeon and presented before King Agrippa. And there he is before all the majesty of the king. And what does he say? His very first words. I am happy to speak with you. How on earth can he say that after 2 years in a row in prison? Go down chapter 26 to verse 19. And Paul has given his testimony of what God has wanted to do with him and through him. And he says, King Agrippa, I was not unfaithful to the heavenly vision. I walked the path. I walked the walk. I did what God required of me and from me. I obeyed wherever it took me. It took me into surprising, it took me into shocking places and experiences, but it was always where the Lord wanted me to be. And sometimes he found that the Lord went ahead of him and waited for him in these places. The company he kept, he was able to speak, yes, I'm happy, because the Lord is with me. I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was a man who suffered a lot underneath the Russian regime because of his stance, and he was spent a lot of time in the gulags and in the hard labor camps of Russia, and especially with the hard regime and the bitter winters that that brought upon them. And he says that from his experience in these prison camps, the only people who were truly free, the only people who were truly free were the Christians, the believers, who were in these camps. Why? Be it prison or palace, they knew the presence of the Lord with them. The company he was with, yes, the presence of the Lord. But the second thing before we close in this part, not only the presence of the Lord, that's one element of the company. The other element of the company he was with was the provision that God had made for him. We already mentioned the way in which the regime was lightened up for him. It was perhaps an especially hard place, this prison, because it was the enemies of the king, those who had fallen out with favor of the king, and no doubt it was made just that little bit difficult, more difficult for them than anyone else. He had privileges. It came from the governor. The provision that the Lord had made for him. We can tease that out and we can look at it ourselves later on. But there was something else. What other provision had God brought and made for him there? He brought the chief of the butler and the chief of the bakers. Their paths crossed. They were the links in the chain. They were the path that would bring Joseph into the palace. And the only way that he could meet with them, and the only place that paths would cross, was where? In the prison. So it was essential that Joseph be in that prison at that time to meet them. The company that the Lord provided for him, the guard who made his life a little bit easier, but especially the baker and the butler, who were, as we're going to consider later on, the links in the chain of God's providence to fulfill what God had said to him. The whole of this episode, the whole of these episodes, these days, these weeks, these verses, when Joseph was in prison, they are one single demonstration of the providence of God and the way he works to fulfill his plans. Let me close just by referring to one thing we were reading at this afternoon ourselves in the house, in the manse. 2 Chronicles chapter 18. The two kings of Israel and Judah were coming together into a treaty, and they were going out to fight together. And Ahab was always the sly man, two steps ahead of everyone else. The battle had said, the prophets had said that there was going to be disaster for King Ahab. So when they were going into battle, he said to the other king, "You keep on your robes, I'll disguise myself," and therefore attract the attention away from King Ahab to the other king, Jehoshaphat. And the enemy went after the wrong king. And when they discovered it was not King Ahab, they just gave up. And you read there in chapter 2 Chronicles 18 and 28 that we read that there was an archer. And the archer had obviously taken an arrow out and had put it in the bow, and he was ready to fire the arrow at, they thought, was the king they were wanting, King Ahab, but it wasn't. And he was, "What'll I do with the arrow?" So he just turned round and he let it fire. And that one arrow shot at nothing. It was shot at nothing. But that was the very arrow that went home and killed the king. The amazing providence of God in the life of Joseph, in the life of a certain archer. God had spoken it. The king was going to be killed. The king had tried to hide. But the word of the Lord was fulfilled through a remarkable providence. And that is neither unusual nor exceptional. There are many providences in our lives that we don't know anything about. Some of them we do. But all of these providences teach us of God's care for us, his believing people. And they shine all the brighter, and they are all the more precious in the dark places of an Egyptian prison, with no help whatsoever from man, and no deliverance by himself. This was the doing of the Lord, and the fulfillment of his word. Psalm 105 and verse 19 tells us that the word of the Lord was the justification of Joseph. He held on to it. Wait for the Lord to write the final chapter. That's what it says. Wait for the Lord to write the final chapter in the book of Providence. And you'll find that everything happens just as the Lord said it would. The providence of God then is a great comfort to God's people, but it's a great challenge to those who are not. Remember what happened to Jonah. He tried to run. God had said to him, "You're doing this," and Jonah tried to run. But the Lord met him and brought him back right to the place where he was of use to the Lord. Joseph didn't run. He just kept walking on the path of obedience, even if that path took him into some astonishing places. But wherever it took him, this was his comfort. This was his consolation. The Lord was with him. Let us pray. O Lord, our gracious God, we bless thy name for the richness of thy word and for the light that comes from it upon our own lives. We bless thee, Lord, for the way in which thou dost help us in a measure to understand thy dealings with us. May we therefore walk closer with thee, be more committed and obedient in our everyday living, and may the joy of being at the center of thy will and purpose be the joy that is deep and paramount in our lives. Come with us, O Lord, and bless to us thy word as we've thought upon it in time and time today. And we pray that thou wouldst remain with us and keep us safe in all the dangers that go on round about us, even delivering us in ways that we may not be aware of. But so may we thank thee for thine interest and concern towards us every day of our lives. Pardon us our sins. In Jesus' name we ask these things. Amen. We close tonight by singing from Psalm 40 and at verse 8. Psalm 40 and at verse 8. To do thy will I take delight, O thou my God that art. Yea, that most holy law of thine I have within my heart. Within the congregation great I righteousness did preach. Lo, thou dost know, O Lord, that I refrain not my speech. I never did within my heart conceal thy righteousness. I thy salvation have declared and shown thy faithfulness. Thy kindness, which most loving is, concealed have not I, nor from the congregation great have hid thy verity.